This is Yumi, and you're listening to Rebel Radio. Funk you, Josh.
What's up? This is Rebel Radio.
What up? What up? This is DJ Newmark.
This is Peanut Butter Wolf.
It's your boy. It's okay.
Keep checking out Rebel Radio.
Rebel Radio.
This is Rebel Radio.
We're in the place right here. Rebel Radio is going down.
What did you say, Rebel Radio?
Oh, wait. Let's do it again.
Rebel Radio.
What's up, Rebels? Welcome back to Rebel Radio, the weekly show where I talk to the Rebels who are shaping youth culture. We find out how they do it, why they do it, and what you can do to get a little piece of the pie for yourself. We're also the only show to bring you new music every week from our friends over at EDM.com. I'm your host, Josh Levine, and my guest in studio with me this week is Yumi. She's a great singer, model, YouTuber. She's the niece of Steve Aoki, and she's signed to his Denmark label. And what I love about Yumi is that in addition to making cool music on her social channels, she talks really openly about the struggles she's had with mental health, with anxiety, with self-confidence. Really, you know, setting a role model for the rest of us to kind of be open and talk about these things. And on our show, she gives us some insight into how she's overcome some of those challenges and is still overcoming them. Great stuff coming up right after our EDM.com track of the week.
You painted me in pictures, they held you in the night. I don't want to feel broken, I want it to feel right. And now the dawn is breaking, it feels too close to touch.
Tim Shopfort and Cash for Gold with Awake, the EDM.com track of the week. If you like that one, get over to EDM.com and check out more new music. And now let's get into the interview with Yumi.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Great now. Aww. I have a new business idea.
I thought you meant because we're here, but...
That's why.
Just
you're
using
here.
Us for our business.
Yeah, of course. No, I'm great. I'm excited to talk to you. Appreciate you making time for us. Mike Jones has been a big help to us since we started.
You know, we all
brings us
Mike Jones.
Great people.
No. Mike Jones is the best.
Absolutely.
Yeah. My voice is gone. I don't know where it went, but that's cool.
And I love talking to Dimmack people. Lee's an old friend.
Lovely.
And Steve and I did a club together in 2005, 2006. Something
That's
like that.
An amazing throwback.
Yeah, so I used to be at Herb Magazine. I was head of marketing there.
Okay.
And Steve, I think he had CineSpace and was kind of like starting out on everything else. And so we did a thing together called Loose Tooth, which was a mess. It was awesome.
Yeah. He has so many projects always, but it's interesting to hear in the beginning in like 2000 when he was no one, just like dabbling in a million things, just like now.
Yeah.
And now he has all the success, but before,
for sure,
it was like trial and error until something stuck.
There's a little bit of kind of just act as if, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, not that, like, you know, he's always, from as far as I know him, he's always been humble and just a cool person. But, you know, I noticed then, like, he just had kind of a flow that was like, we're here, we're doing this, and then he's going to go do something else and just kind of keep it moving. Which I think is a cool way to be.
Oh, yeah. It's very inspiring and makes everyone else feel lazy in the family.
Is that right?
Yeah. But luckily, like, me and my sister have the natural... I feel like everyone in our family has the natural drive to do so anyways. So it's not like we're forcing ourselves to be like that. It's just like we're all kind of inspired by each other and the work ethic in our family. Because my grandpa was like that. And sure. he kind of created that atmosphere.
Yeah.
And that legacy to continue on.
Did you know him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he passed away when I was 11. Uh-huh. So I didn't know him
right.
that well, but I'm the oldest grandchild, so I know him more mm-hmm. than anyone else, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what did you, I mean, you kind of know that legacy, but what did you take from him as far as that's concerned?
I mean, it's so, I experienced him more as a granddaughter, mm-hmm. you know, because when you're 11, you're not like, I want to do like music. I want to do restaurants. Like, tell me what,
sure.
you know? But I think it was just like at that age, following him around and seeing his impact with Benihana and like how people respect him mm-hmm. as a Japanese business owner
yeah.
was inspiring for me. And I didn't really realize it until later on looking back.
Right.
Because when you're 11 and that's like the first thing that you know, you yeah. think that it's normal.
Sure.
And then you realize that it's not normal. I didn't even know that Benihana was like a big restaurant
right.
until I moved to California when I was 15.
Where were you?
I was in Annapolis.
Oh, okay.
And like no one knew what that was.
Right. There's no Benihana out.
Yeah. I was like, oh yeah, my grandpa owned a restaurant named Benihana. And they were like, oh cool. Like, I don't know what that is. Yeah. Whatever. And then I was in class in, it was like one of my first days in freshman year at a new school. And we were talking about like our favorite restaurants and stuff. And someone's like, Benihana. And I'm like,
is that right?
Yeah. And then I was like, wait, people know what Benihana is? Yeah. And then it was in that song, like, Benihanhan, cooking all the wontons. Benihanhan, don't sell no fucking wontons. I don't wear Sean John, but fuck with that. It was a big song by someone. It was on the
really?
Radio. And I was just screaming. Yeah.
But I didn't know
it
that.
Was just like popping up everywhere. And I'm like, and then I kind of, because my mom would be like, yeah, you know, he did a lot. And this is a New York Times article. And I had no idea. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of unraveled for me. In my teen years, and I was like, very influential guy.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's always interesting to discover that. It's sort of not, you know, I always feel like our parents or our grandparents, like we don't know who they are. We mm-hmm. just know them as mom and dad or whatever.
Yeah.
And then to sort of discover who they are out in the world is interesting, and especially in your case. Yeah. But it's the same thing. You know, my grandfathers were not famous
still influential.
Yeah, certainly within their circles. And it took me years too to sort of understand what I took from them.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
Yeah. I mean, I'm equally influenced by my dad's side mm-hmm. that, they live in Pennsylvania. They live a very simple life. They're introverted, they're beautiful, kind, humble people. Mm-hmm. And not that my mom's side isn't, but I take away different things from my dad's side, like patience and learning how to relax.
Yeah.
and humor and different things. So I definitely, I think it's cool because I'm not in a complete celebrity family. Mm-hmm. I have like both sides to teach me different things.
Yeah, that's important.
Yeah.
Rebel Radio is brought to you by HoneyBook. Over at Rebel Industries, the parent company for the Rebel Radio show, we work with a ton of freelancers. We use copywriters, producers, editors, designers, everything we can think of. We try to hire the best people we can. We hire them because they're great at what they do, but they're not always great at some of the business details, proposals, invoices, contracts, that kind of stuff. We're talking about small business owners, solo entrepreneurs, people with talent and creativity and skills. And I think they should be using HoneyBook, and maybe so should you. If you're not familiar, HoneyBook is an all-in-one business management platform. It makes it easy to manage your business with automated features and templates for contracts, proposals, invoices. You can get paid faster. There's calendars so you don't forget what you're supposed to do. It's really a great system and really, really streamlines and simplifies managing a business. allows you to save time and do more of what you do, or do more sitting on the beach or whatever the hell you're going to do. That's why we partnered with HoneyBook.com to offer Rebel Radio listeners 50% off the first year of HoneyBook with your promo code REBEL. So get over to HoneyBook.com today. Use the promo code REBEL for 50% off your first year. Again, that's HoneyBook.com, promo code REBEL.
So let's talk about you, though. When did you first, so going back kind of to music as at the beginning, as you said, at 11, you weren't thinking about that.
I kind of was, though.
Were you?
Yeah.
Do you remember the first record?
My uncle wasn't, like, around musically.
Do you remember the first record you ever, like, fell in love with?
My first CD ever was the Black Eyed Peas. I forgot. It was the one with My Humps on it.
Okay.
That's all I remember, because I was, like, I felt so, like, rebellious listening to it all the time.
Is that right?
Yeah.
How old are you at that point?
Maybe, like, 11 or, no, maybe younger. I can't remember. But that was just...
But you were old enough to know that that song was, like,
yeah,
too old for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't funk with my heart.
Okay.
I don't know if funk is the word that is really used, but oh, that's really what I remember,
yeah,
at the time.
That's good. They got you the clean version.
Yeah. My dad got it for me for Christmas. And because at the time, CDs were how you listen to music.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
I'm young enough to be a Spotify person, but, like, old enough to remember CDs.
Right.
yeah. So Black Eyed Peas was my first CD. And that was, like, my favorite group at the time. Mm-hmm. I think I was influenced by...
Is there one member that you identified with?
Definitely Fergie, because uh-huh, she's the only woman in the, sure, group, and I thought that was so cool.
Yeah.
And I can't really remember my personal influences at the time, but I grew up with my dad listening to, like, Maxwell and A Tribe Called Quest, and he loves Jill Scott, big fan of Jill Scott. Erykah Badu, house music, mixes, yeah, lots of electronic, and then my mom was on the other side, like Goo Goo Dolls, Smashing Pumpkins,
oh, wow,
U2.
Okay.
And so I loved both, but yeah, I always leaned towards my dad's side.
Sure.
And so I think, and he loved Black Eyed Peas as well, and I think it was, like, something that we bonded over, so mm-hmm, that was why it was my first CD. But I can't really remember anything, any other CDs or albums at that time.
And then when did you start singing or making your own music?
I started singing, I remember I had, my parents got me a boombox with disco balls on the end.
Oh, wow.
And I remember I was 6 or 7 and I had, like, a Now 7 CD or, uh-huh, something. And I was obsessed with the song Celebration.
Okay.
Not so much anymore, even though it's a classic. But I just, like, repeated that song so much. And I would invite my grandparents and people,
like,
to come
over. Like
the
Cooler Gang song?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would invite my grandparents and family members to come over, and I'd perform for them with the disco ball.
Mm-hmm.
Playing. And
a boombox with a disco balls on it.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that.
I know. They have to recreate it.
We got my son his little plug-in disco balls.
But not on a boombox.
No.
Yeah. I mean,
that's cool.
Another business idea.
Oh my God,
for you.
I got to look that up.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's really a business idea, but it is funny because, you know, I'm a lot older than you. And so, when I grew up, like, I grew up before the Walkman.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, Walkman came out when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But before that, like, boomboxes were everywhere. Like, you know, and you'd be on the bus or at the beach or at the park or at school or, you know, people are just playing music for everyone around.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the Walkman, like, totally changed the world in the sense that all of a sudden you could listen to music just by yourself, which is such an interesting difference, right? Because, you know, before that, like, you had no choice but to share your music with everyone.
Yeah, you're just kind of stuck.
Or you're, more importantly, you're stuck next to the person with the boombox, right? Because whatever they're playing, that's what you're listening to.
I imagine that that's like the vintage version of an aux cord, right?
That's maybe my least favorite thing about being married, is like having to listen to my wife's music in the car.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah.
I mean,
can't relate to that problem.
It's great if that's like the worst thing.
Yeah. Yeah, but, for sure.
But it's pretty bad. and now my son, like, it's a whole different thing. We're not here to talk about that.
Okay.
You had the boombox and you started performing.
Yeah. So, and I'm sure that I started younger than that, but that was my early
When was the first time you performed for people who weren't family?
I remember I did a recital at maybe 11 or 12, like, talent shows. Uh-huh. I've just always wanted to sing.
And... did you just love being on stage? Was that like?
Yes and no. I've had pretty bad anxiety my whole life, but it's never stopped me from doing music and like what I love. It's been crippling at times. And I remember being younger, it wasn't like I was like this ham that like could perform in front of anyone. It was always a struggle, and I think I've definitely gotten so much better in the recent years. Like, I'm fine now, but it wasn't always easy. It didn't always come easy, but it's like my passion for singing and music.
So can we talk about that for a minute? Because I've seen some of your videos, and you've talked about anxiety, and I know that that's you know, that's one of the things that we wrestle with as a society, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a ton of anxiety out there.
For sure.
And what I love that you've talked about is just kind of doing it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't really have anxiety, so I'm not necessarily qualified to speak on it. But my belief anyway has been that the way you get over fear of doing something is by doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the
Absolutely.
Only way to get over
Yeah,
it,
for sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So what have you done? You say it's gotten better. Like, what have you done that's been helpful, or what have you tried that's not been helpful?
Actually, therapy has helped me a lot. My mom is a marriage and family therapist, so it's not a taboo thing in our family to go to therapy. It's actually encouraged to process our feelings and talk about things. But talking about fears with a therapist, my therapist actually specializes in performance anxiety.
Wow.
Which, like, I didn't know when I walked in. Yeah. He told me later on, but I was like, okay, that's perfect. So talking it out with my therapist, and then he takes me through, like, this spiral of, like, okay, well, why are you afraid? And then, like, okay, well, do you need to be afraid? Like, what's the worst that could happen? Mm-hmm. Could you die? And, like, goes all the way down to the bottom, and you're like, actually, I have no real reason to have all this tension and anxiety about something that's not going to kill me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, people are just people.
Yeah.
And though it's scary at the time, the more you do it, it's like when you first start driving and you're like, oh, I don't know what to do. And you feel like you're going to crash every second. And then the more you drive, then you could, like, I'm not saying that I drive with my knees, but like, you could drive with your knees if you wanted to.
Well,
it's like secondhand
nature.
It's
important when you're texting. You need your knees.
You said it, I didn't, but yeah. So it's like anything new where you have this fear of the unknown and stuff that you haven't done before. But then the more you do it, the more well-versed you are and the less you fear it.
Yeah. So what happens now when anxiety comes up? Like, how do you process it?
I say that I have tools, but it's really just like mental exercises. Like, I take myself through the spiral of questions. Like, why am I afraid right now? And then I'll be like, because I don't want to look dumb, or like, I don't want to forget the words. And it's like, okay, but what's the worst that could happen if you do? It's like, well, people remember it for a second. It's like, okay, but people move on, and then it just keeps going. And and then again, I'm left at the bottom where it's like, do I really need to waste my energy being afraid of this. You know, it's just 30 minutes of my life or an hour of my life, and I'm just going to move on. Yeah. You know, people are going to move on. And I think the important thing is that my mom always says this, is that when you're so consumed in what other people think about you, you have to remember that everyone's thinking about themselves and worrying mm-hmm. about themselves, and no one is really worrying or thinking about you.
I love that. So my wife moved here from Miami, and when she got here, like every night she would have this thing of about what to wear, which I know is not uncommon.
Yeah, for sure.
But I always used to say to her, you know, L.A. is such a, everyone's just worried about themselves. And I think that's true around the world, but
yeah. But
in L.A. we're especially self-centered.
Yeah.
And I was like, you could walk in naked and nobody would even notice because they're worried about how they look.
Exactly. But for everything.
Right.
For everything. It's like, oh my gosh, what are they going to think about my music? And they might like love a song or hate a song. But again, it's like a small part of their day. It's not going to consume their life. They're not going to be thinking about how much they hate something that you did or love something that you did all day.
Yeah.
And I think that's like the biggest thing that I hold on to with my anxiety of performing and music and everything that I do. Because it's really like no one cares that much about mm-hmm. other people, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you come to music as a career? What was the moment when you decided this is what I'm going to do?
I remember being in class when you're younger and everyone's like, oh, you know, career days and what do you want to do when you grow up? And I've always wanted to be a singer. Mm. I've put that on like every like arts and crafts paper. And
like written in macaroni?
Yeah.
Cool.
Definitely, I'm sure I have some macaroni arts and crafts at home with that.
Yeah, sure.
And I feel like a lot of people, they never change their answer, but so many people do. You know, it's like that childhood belief of like, I could be an astronaut or I could be president, which like some people do that, but it's rare.
Most of us don't.
Most of you don't. But I've always wanted to do this. And so it's not a matter of when, it's a matter of like, I guess, how I, like when I created a game plan, I guess, because I'm still in school, majoring in graphic design, just for my own tools and my own skill set. And my parents also wanted me to go to school because they're Asian. Well, my mom's Asian. But anyways, like they think it's important and I agree.
Yeah.
But so I was in school for a year or I was in school attending physically for 3 years and I wasn't doing music. And I was like, oh, this is what I wanted to do. Like I it's always been on my mind. But I was like, wasn't really pursuing it. Like I'd write songs and like perform here and there, but I didn't have any producers or networks of people or a team or a label or anything. Like I had nothing but like me and my ukulele and my MacBook Pro, just like recording what I can. And I just felt like the most depressed I ever felt in my life.
Wow.
Because I feel like after high school, especially, you're like looking at certain people and you're like, oh, like they're doing what they want to do. Like, why can't I do that? Why am I stuck in school for 8 hours a day learning about like stupid general ed stuff that's never going to apply to me in life. Like not that I don't love geology, but like that I don't care about geology. You know what I mean? So I was super miserable. And I had this commercial manager at the time who was really pushing me to do The Voice. And I was like, no, like, I don't know. And I just didn't have the confidence to do The Voice. Because there's these people on the show that perform on street corners and have so much experience. And they, like, eat, sleep, and breathe music. And I'm in school just, like, I don't know, chilling. Okay. And so So I auditioned for The Voice in this like mass cattle call.
Like, oh, wow.
Thousands and thousands of people. And I was shaking and like didn't move and I was just super still. And then they put me through to the next round and I was like, what?
What's that feeling?
I was in shock. Yeah. Because I really didn't, at the time, I didn't think that I had potential to do it. And I think I was 18 at the time. But then, so I came back for the next round, and I think it's like a few hundred people. Mm-hmm. And I performed for them, and it was like executives, more official people. And they put me through to the next round. And then I was like, oh my gosh. So I went to this hotel with like 200 people.
Yeah.
And they put us in these rooms and it was like very intense and official.
Sure.
And I was like, I can't believe that I'm here right now. Like I'm in a, they put me in a hotel room.
Right.
You know what I mean? And yeah, it was surreal, but feeling, not that like people's opinions are everything, but feeling the confidence that like, oh, I do have something mm-hmm. that these people see. I didn't make it through that round. It took like 3 weeks to hear from them. Cause it was like the final executives of like, I forgot what the network is, but, yeah, so I didn't make it through that round and that's the round to audition for the TV round.
Okay.
And then once you get on the TV round, not everyone is even picked to audition for the TV round.
Right.
So it's crazy. Like people are there or prepping for a month and they like have to tell their families like, oh, I'm doing like jury duty or something.
Oh, really?
Or like they have to make up an excuse. Like they can't say why they're there.
Yeah. I'm in the hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a blessing because I needed the confidence just from the auditions to move on.
Yeah.
And I was reconnecting with my now manager, Eliza, at the time of auditioning.
Hi, Eliza.
For The Voice. and once I got off, once I got declined from The Voice, I went to her house and I was like, I don't know what to do. Like, I want to do music, but I was like, I was really pumped at the time. I was like, I want to do music so bad, but I don't have any producers. I don't know what to do. And she was like, I have this friend, a new friend of mine, and he produces, and maybe I'll link you guys. And like, people have always said that.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, okay, sure. And then she made it happen.
We like to talk in LA.
Yeah, we do. And I was in Orange County at the time, so I'm like, I don't know, like, kind of careful of LA and things. Not that I don't trust you. so she connected us and he and she are like my closest friends now and he produced my whole EP. So for love you, this is it, you have my heart. And now I know you can't say it to be apart. And like still nice. So much of what I'm doing now.
What's his name?
Kahan.
Okay.
Yeah. And at the time, I was also reaching out to SoundCloud producers, just like really digging through digital crates, I guess you could say, and just like collabing with them. And like so many of them have never come out because they were terrible. Because like people just, you know, everyone's a producer.
Sure.
But just like finding one.
Yeah.
Has, I guess it's like how I started my career. It's been, I'd say like 2016, it was like going really like a lot faster because I was like doing just like singing lessons and like things here and there. But then when I started making music, it was like 2016 until now. And I just haven't stopped.
So think about that experience with The Voice. What do you think you took from that?
I definitely took that there are so many talented people and so many untalented people that are really confident.
Sure.
And also inspired by their confidence.
Yeah.
You know? And so I took that, like, there are so many talented people, but also, like, so many different styles. Mm-hmm. And, like, that there's room for everyone to have their own art. And also that, just, like, for me personally, I took that I am good enough to be successful by executive producers or whoever, good enough to make it through the rounds when I didn't think I was good enough to even make it through the first round. So I think it kind of proved to me that, like, I can do it. But I should have done it with or without their validation. Mm-hmm. But at the time I was young and depressed in school and I needed something to tell me that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think when we look out at the world, we assume that confidence and ability are go hand in hand, and they really, I think, have nothing to do with each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's where fake it till you make it comes in.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but some people are just confident for no reason that we could understand by looking at their performance.
But some people actually, like, skate by and are able to make careers from just being like, yeah, I can do that. And they really, like, lying on your resume.
Right. That's me. I don't really have a resume, but
yeah.
I just, you know.
Like, oh, Google it at home.
Just kind of do stuff and then see where it takes you.
Yeah.
Okay. What about, so you model also,
mm-hmm.
and you have this all this work on YouTube. So how do you navigate all that?
Right now things are balanced pretty well. I'd say I'm focusing more on music, at times because of, like, deadlines and dates to drop things. But I'd say that modeling, it's really just, like, coordinating with teams. Like, I have Eliza as my manager, mm-hmm. and Wilhelmina as my agents. And it's really just important to, like, book out things so that things don't get scheduled on the same day.
Right.
Which, like, has happened before.
I'm sure.
Not fun.
Yeah.
So it's just, like, coordinating and having shared calendars and staying organized. And I think that's...
What do you do to stay organized?
I have lists and I love, like, emailing,
like,
to people.
Like, handwritten list?
No.
No.
No, I don't know. I can't get behind notebooks entirely because I'm just, it's too stressful. I don't know why.
Okay.
So I just, like, confirming with people until they respond, which, like, you have to be aggressive,
mm-hmm.
Or, like, following up because I'm naturally a passive person, but I've learned to be more aggressive because it's my career on the line, and I can't just be like, I don't want to, like, be annoying.
Sure.
You know, it's like I have to be annoying if I want to make sure that everything is
organized. I met this guy that
organized.
Was super annoying and also successful, and he had this little phrase that he's like an old school, like, sales guy, and he used to say, like, I'd rather be famous for being annoying than for being broke. And I thought that was cool.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Still annoying, but, but so what? Like,
yeah. But if you, I guess you've, if you want, I mean, I'm not, still, like, not the most.
You don't seem very annoying.
Thank you. That means a lot. So I could be more, I mean, I'm still, like, a passive person, but I'm, with business, I'm not, like, I used to be so scared of, like, my agents and, like, saying too much or.
Oh, right.
You know, but.
Don't want to bother people.
Yeah, I don't want to bother them. Like, they have so many things, but, like, now I'll just, like, email. Keep emailing, like, just a reminder.
So how do you, when you get stuck, when you get, like, when your thought is, I don't want to bother them,
mm-hmm.
but you know you have to, what do you do or what do you say to yourself? Like, how do you push through that?
I guess for me, it's, this year, it's separating business and personal.
Mm.
Like, I was really obsessed with, I'm a people pleaser, so I want everyone to be friends with me, and I, you know, want them to like me. Not so much anymore, but it really consumed me at a time. And so for me, it was like, I don't want my agents to think I'm annoying. I don't want my manager to think that I'm annoying. I don't want my label. You know, I just, like, cared what they thought about me. But then my mom, who at times has been very much a momager, said to me that, you know, at the end of the day, these people go home. They're not thinking, like, oh, Yumi's so annoying, or, like, oh, Yumi this. Like, I'm sure at times they take that home.
I don't know if that's true. I mean, not about you, but I know a lot of managers who are just like, oh, my clients. Just like, you know.
But again, it's not, people don't think about people as much as we think they do.
Okay.
Right? I mean, that's just, like, my thought. Like, and even if they don't like me, like, I have to do what I have to do to make sure my career is going well. So maybe they do think about me when they go home.
It's probably their
problem. I'm really, like, not that aggressive. I think I sound more aggressive than what I'm saying. But at the end of the day, like, it doesn't matter if we're best friends or if we're friends at all. I don't think friends is, like, always the best thing to be in certain situations. But first, they're in business with me. And then second, maybe we could be friends. But, like, I have to focus on my career.
For the record, you're not annoying at all.
No,
I...
Can you cut this part out?
I know, but we're friends first, Eliza.
We don't want to hear that. So back to being annoying. No, I totally get it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, first of all, the fact that you're, like, conscientious about it means you're not that annoying.
Yeah.
Right? Because then there are some people that are just like, I don't care. You know, all the only thing that matters is what matters to me.
I still care so much.
Yeah.
So much.
But, but you know, but we're talking about it because that's an important piece of, I don't think anyone gets to be successful without being inconvenient to somebody, especially themselves.
Very true.
Right? Yeah. But there's so many barriers that you have to push through. And you talked about feedback and the confidence that comes with making it through the next round, et cetera.
Yeah.
What about the other side of that? What's been the toughest feedback?
I mean, I got tough feedback on The Voice. The next round is usually the next day.
Right.
but they gave me 6 months to work on performance confidence. So I went to the next round and the next section of auditions for the next season.
Yeah.
So I worked with a coach for those 6 months and I came back and then I made it through that round. But I was, like, working, like, weekly 2 to 3 hours a week. But for me, nothing has been, like, super heartbreaking. I was someone that took things so personal.
Yeah.
In life until recently, until I've started seeing a therapist and going through those tools. But I think that things will break my heart for a second, but it's never been me to just, like, stop and sulk and to let that keep me from doing what I want to do.
Yeah.
Like, my passion always outweighs the heartbreak of rejection.
Yeah.
And I think, like, when I first started with Kahan and the EP was being played around to people before it came out, of course, like, people were like, oh, I don't really like this. Or, like, I played it for this producer that I was collabing with, and he's like, it's kind of sloppy, like, things don't, they aren't really, it's kind of all over the place. And that was the first opinion ever, and I was like, ugh.
Right.
Because I just spent, like, so much of my, it's like my heart,
right?
You know, a part of my heart. So that, I feel like my first experiences with collaborating with, like, producers and them hearing my stuff, it, like, started out hard. And again, I think, like, when you start out a certain way, you think that that is normal.
Sure.
And so I, like, started out with that opinion and then and then I heard better opinions. But I got both. But I think it was like the norm for me for a sec. And so it made me tougher because I'm like, I had to learn that just because someone doesn't like your art doesn't mean that it's bad for everyone. Like, it's like if you walk into an art gallery, you and me are not going to be like, oh, yeah, we love all the same pieces.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which is something that I just learned or just realized recently because I was still really attached to like people not liking my stuff.
I think that's tempting.
Yeah.
I mean, right? You put a piece of yourself into the work.
Yeah, you want people to connect with it.
Sure.
So
I'm just reading this book. I was reading this morning that kind of on this topic, and the guy said, when people tell you what's wrong with your work, they're almost always right. And when they tell you how to fix it, they're almost always wrong. Which I thought
was
interesting perspective.
Yeah.
And ultimately, it's up to you to kind of find the way that works for you, but that outside feedback is really important.
Yeah. I was in a place where I'm not a defensive person in that sense. Like, I'll be like, yeah, like, I'll change whatever you want, you know?
Right.
And I'm not that person anymore. But in the beginning, I was like, yeah, I'll do whatever you want. Like, I suck. But then realizing, like, the art gallery idea, like, just because they think something is bad, and if I really like it, and I know in my heart that I like that beat or whatever that they're criticizing, like, I have to do what I want at the end of the day as an artist, because it's my art. It's not theirs.
Yeah.
But of course, I'll take constructive criticism if I agree with it, because it's an outside perspective, and I might not always see it or realize it.
Yeah. So how long were you working on music before you released something?
2 years.
Okay.
Well, I was working on the EP for 2 years. I I found this producer named Almost on SoundCloud, and we were sending things back and forth for a few months, and then he sent me this track, and I sent him like a vocal the next day, and then we put it out, I think, the next month, and that was pretty
fast.
Did
you guys ever meet in person?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, later on, actually.
Yeah.
It was... And we live like 30 minutes away from each other.
Oh, that's
it was
funny.
Just like scheduling.
Yeah.
And then.
But so the whole time you're collaborating, you hadn't met.
No.
I think that's such an interesting thing. I mean, that's kind of a new phenomenon, right? That, you know, usually, you know, the collaborations have always been about two people in a room together.
Yeah. Not anymore.
No.
Not in this age.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like working with people in like Belgium and Europe. So we put out that song in like a month, and it was just growing and growing and growing. And then we did another song later on. It took like 3 months to come out.
Mm-hmm.
But me and Kahan finished the EP before that second song came out. And we were sitting on it waiting for, I was dying to put it out. I'm like, let's just put it out independently. And then my manager was like, no, like, let's wait for a label. Let's see what we can do with this.
Yeah.
And then Dimmock picked it up. But it was with, like, the scheduling of re-releasing the first song and then the second song and then working with the label on their schedule, it took 2 years.
So at what point did you bring your music to Steve? And what was that? Obviously, it's very different playing it for your uncle who's this famous musician than, you know, the other people that had given you feedback.
Yeah. I feel like I've always been bringing my music to him.
Okay.
Like, my mom... She is kind of a momager. She, I remember being like 13 or 14, and she's like, sing for him. And like, me and my sister sang from him a cappella, like off tune, really, really bad, like a Beyonce cover, which I definitely shouldn't have chosen.
Which song?
Halo.
Okay.
It was so bad. Just, you know, just let Beyonce be Beyonce. So then I didn't have any like recorded things to show him, but then I showed him a song that I recorded with someone else that like never went anywhere in 2015.
Mm.
And he was like, this is really good. And that was like it. And then I showed him I'm Sorry, the song that I did with, or no, I showed him another like bad SoundCloud collab in 2013. So I was like dabbling here and there, just never consistently. And I showed him that one, and he was like, "This is really good." Been through the same old thing for years. You've worn me down, taking it all out, shed my tears. And I've got nothing left for you. And then he said that there's a ceiling for artists. And everyone's just trying to swim to the top.
Okay.
And then when I make it to the top of the ceiling and I need to break through, then he'll help me. Mm. But I need to swim to the top of the ceiling. And so I was like, okay, I just got to swim to the top of the ceiling. That was
so
like,
did you know what to do with that advice when you got it?
I just figured it meant make a name for myself.
Okay.
Like, and I didn't know exactly what that looked like because I was so long ago. So I was just like, okay, I gotta make a name for myself. I gotta make a name for myself just by myself. And I didn't think that he would help me when I showed him my EP. And when I showed him my EP, I was just asking for an opinion. Right. Like, I never expected him to put anything out anywhere or to share anything because of the ceiling thing. And just because, like, I want to make a name for myself. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be a leech. So I showed him the EP, and I was like, yeah. His friend Jacob was like, oh, yeah, maybe we could put it out here on this side label. And I was like, yeah, maybe Jacob can do something with it. And then he was like, or we could put it out on Dimmock. And I was like, cool. I was like, what? Like, what? And I didn't argue. I was just like, yeah, that would be awesome.
Sure.
And ever since then, he's, every song that I've shown him, he's like, yeah, Dimmock. And then I've gotten like really close to the label, and I've just become like a Dimmock artist. And it was just kind of unintentionally. And he shares every song on social media with swipe up links, and is just like the most supportive person ever. And I mean, we've gotten so close mm-hmm. in the past few years that I think it's not something that's like random, because I know that it's like a really close uncle is like proud of his niece.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a business thing. It's like, I'm genuinely proud of you and I want to share this with my fans.
Hey, if you're enjoying this one, let's go back into Rebel Radio archives. Another great Dimmock artist, Rel, my man, is coming from the Jersey club scene, making just crazy, crazy beats. And he's got some great stories to tell about that culture and what it's like living in LA across the country from that scene, and kind of helping to spread the word. Great interview with Rel, if you want to get into that one after you finish up here with Yumi.
What do you think, so besides the swimming to the ceiling, which is, it's a cool, I get it.
Yeah.
What do you think you learned from Steve?
Oh my gosh, so much. My brain will explode.
Yeah? Give us one big takeaway.
One thing is, one time he said that, he performs at Omnia in a lot of these Vegas nightclubs a lot, and my song just came out, and he was like, where were you the other night? I was gonna have you perform Sirens at Omnia or whatever. And I was like, what? Oh my God, you have to tell me these things beforehand. He's like, you got to always be ready.
Right.
And I was like, oh my gosh, I have to always be ready. But I think that that's a good, or at least act like you're ready.
Sure.
Like, you can't be like screaming, you know?
Right.
So I think always be ready. Always be confident enough to be ready, I guess. So that's a huge thing that I've learned this year. And, I mean, he's kind of like a take every opportunity type of person. And definitely, like, the way he carries himself and treats people is, I think, the biggest lesson for me. Because, like, we come from, like, I was kind of not raised by my grandma, but his mom and my mom's mom my grandma lived with us mm-hmm. through my whole high school experience. So, like, I'm influenced by her.
Yeah.
And, like, the way that she raised them as well. And just, like, treating everyone, no matter if they're famous or not, no matter if it's, like, a homeless person or, like, Kim Kardashian, you know, right. just the same, with the same kindness and mm-hmm. humility. And he never really talks bad about, I mean, he's never talked bad about anyone in the industry, even if they're controversial. Uh-huh. And I think he's just, like, a forgiving person, like, no one's canceled and, like, everyone has a chance if they want to change and just, like, very positive. And I think that's just, like, genuinely his heart.
Yeah.
It's just to be just, like, positive and, like, wanting to be friends with anyone. And that's really inspiring for me because I think it's popular to get on the hate wagon of, like, oh, like, they suck or, like, they're weird.
Right.
which is, like, not me, but it's very easy with social media as well.
Yes, I noticed, you know, on your YouTube, and I think you're, you know, you seem very open. Obviously, you talk about topics that are really personal. And, you know, I think it's tempting. How can I say it? Like, you feel much more of a YouTuber than a musician on YouTube, right? Because I think musicians tend to be very kind of locked into their persona
mm-hmm.
and they're kind of performing at all times. Is that intentional to be that open? And is there a downside to it? Seems like your comments on YouTube are all very supportive, and which yeah. is sort of not the way it always is on YouTube.
Yeah, I think I'm really bad at having a persona.
Okay.
You know, like, I feel like a lot of official people in LA and, like, agents and managers and, like, no one from my team, but just, like, outside people are always, and, like, it works for people. So I understand what they're saying. I'm not, like, trying to diss them, but, you know, like, be more like this, like, walk into a room and be like, I'm here, or, like,
right.
you know, so it's encouraging a little bit of an ego or a little bit of a guard.
Sure.
And even, like, I've thought about even trying, and I just can't do it.
Yeah.
Because it just feels wrong for me, because I was raised as an open book. Like, yeah. my mom is like, process your feelings, like, be vulnerable. So, like, vulnerability.
It's got to be crazy growing up with a therapist.
Yeah. Because she was a therapist even before she was a therapist.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, vulnerability has been always easy for me my whole life, yeah. almost too easy at yeah. times.
Have you seen, since yeah. you've been kind of out in the public, have you seen a downside to that? Or should we all just be more vulnerable?
I think I've learned a balance.
Because
at times I was too vulnerable, sharing too much online. That's why, like, a big percentage of my videos are gone. I'm trying to start fresh.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because I was so vulnerable to the point where I thought no one could hurt me and that anything that I said was safe.
Mm-hmm.
But then you grow as a person over the years and you're like, oh, I don't agree with the things that I said when right. I was 18 and
yeah,
I shouldn't be sharing things.
I'm glad no one knows what I said when I was 18.
Yeah. Yeah, can you imagine if that was like public history?
I
yeah, so I've realized now that there's a balance to be had. And to, like, guard your heart to a certain extent, because
yeah.
not everyone is as nice as they portray themselves.
Sure.
And, like, some people do want to hurt you.
I mean, did you run into that, or was that more of, like, a precaution?
I think I ran into it a little bit, but it was enough for me to realize, oh, I need to balance
yeah.
that. And I think I learned that from my mom and, like, people who are extremely vulnerable that actually carry it in a nice balanced way, mm-hmm. where I was just like word vomiting on people
yeah.
all the time, which I yeah. do sometimes, but I learn how to do it now
yeah.
better. Yeah.
What's next?
So we have some singles coming out in the new year.
Okay.
I think the first single's coming out in February. I have a big campaign that I can't talk about yet.
Cool.
Which is exciting. And yeah, I'm excited for the new music because my EP that just came out was 2 years old and I've been working on stuff during that time. So I think for people to hear my new sound and something that represents me now is so exciting for me.
And is the thinking, I know that, you know, with streaming, like the way that artists release music keeps changing. And so 2 years sounds like a long time between putting out releases. Is that, like, is the plan to kind of operate that way? Not necessarily 2 years, but, you know, I know other artists are like just dropping singles, you know, back to back. How do you think about that sort of strategy?
So, I mean, my uncle waited 3 years for Neon Future 3 and just came out. So it's not a uncommon thing for artists. I think now, like my first EP, we put out 2 singles first, and the 2 singles did good. And then the last 3 on the EP were kind of unnoticed. And I'm realizing now, I've known for a long time, that our generation's attention span is like 6 seconds long. They don't want to hear a 4 or 5 minute song. They don't want to watch a video that's 10 minutes long. Like, they want bite-sized content. And they want something that they could focus their attention on. So I think that singles is where it's at for especially new artists, because if you give them like a 10 song album and no one knows who you are, no one's going to listen. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, you talk about 3 years, like, it's very different when you're Steve Aoki.
You have all these other projects going on.
People are waiting, or they're, you know, but when you're developing that,
it's better to show them like one great song that represents you and you want to share with people, and then let them spoil all their attention on that for a while until you do give them the next one, and then they can give their attention on that instead of, not that I regret my EP because I learned a lot of lessons and I love it. But I think now giving them singles and just choosing which songs I really want people to show attention to and listen.
Nice.
Yeah.
I have to get a little lightning round.
Okay.
Before we get out of here.
Okay.
What's your favorite city to travel to?
New York.
Who's your favorite DJ?
Steve Aoki.
What's the last great book you read?
The Four Agreements.
What movie have you seen the most in your life?
Kiki's Delivery Service by Hayao Miyazaki.
I have no idea what that is.
It's a very Asian thing.
Okay.
Yeah, like anime.
It's in English?
Like Totoro. Have you seen Totoro?
No.
Okay. You got to watch Totoro. Apparently. It's in English. It's not in Japanese.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid to watch a movie in Japanese, but I've never seen those.
Yeah.
Like, I watch Beat Takeshi movies.
I haven't seen
those. Like a, he does, he's probably too old for you, but he does like gangster movies and then comedies, weird like romantic comedies and gangster movies.
Okay.
He's kind of like the De Niro of Japan.
Nice. Yeah.
Not what we're talking about. Tell me one decision that changed your life forever.
I mean, I guess auditioning for The Voice. Yeah.
Yeah, it's big.
Yeah.
So complete this sentence for yourself. I don't have talent. I have blank.
I don't have talent. I have humor.
That didn't come off very funny.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. It's hard being on the spot. It's like...
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's the idea.
I have vulnerability. I have a great team.
So if I was on your team...
Yeah.
What's something I would hear you say over and over?
This is a really bad lightning round. I'm taking so long.
No, you're probably the best we've had. Usually people like just tell these big stories about
something that I say. Can I phone a friend?
Sure.
What is something that I say often? Lightning round. Mike
what
Jones.
What would you like her to say off?
Mike Jones. Oh, well, you say go team, so I say go team.
Yeah.
Yeah, I say go team. It's more
about teamwork or yeah. hard or keep trying or
we,
get discouraged.
Yeah.
Try again.
We, yeah, so me, her, and Kahan, we call ourselves warm team. It's a long story, but.
Okay.
So we're always like, go warm team.
But warm
like,
team.
Go team, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Because I was really pushing like warm vibes.
Keep it warm.
Yeah. For yeah, sure. Warm and friendly, you know.
Nice.
Just warm.
All right.
Yeah.
Who would you be most excited to learn is a fan of your work?
Kaytranada.
Love him.
Love him. Legendary. Iconic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a great lightning round.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Yay.
So where should everyone find and follow you?
Instagram is the name is Yumi.
The name is Yumi.
Yes. Because Yumi is taken by a baby food company.
How rude.
I know. If you're listening, Yumi
Baby
Food.
Maybe you should buy
food.
That company.
One day, maybe. Yeah, no harm.
Let's add baby food to the list.
Yeah.
Mugs.
Mugs, baby food. Yeah. You just be one.
It could be
one
baby
umbrella.
Food served in mugs.
Here we go.
It's not really a good idea.
I know this baby is holding like this big mug with like insults on it.
Yeah. See?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, maybe.
No.
Yeah, so Spotify, iTunes, Apple Music.
Sure.
SoundCloud, YouTube. Everything is.
All the places.
Yeah.
MySpace.
Not MySpace. We should probably get it on
I love it how MySpace was coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah, that didn't.
Yeah,
didn't
I mean.
Really work out.
You know, MySpace wants to thrive, let them try and thrive.
I'm not anti-MySpace.
I'm not anti-MySpace, too. Yeah. Yeah, so basically everywhere.
Nice.
All the main socials.
Awesome. Well, excited to hear what comes next.
Thank you. Excited to share. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, anytime. Come back, promote stuff.
I will.
We'll sell our mug collection.
Yes, mug collection coming soon. 2019. Maybe 2020.
Yeah, it takes a long time. That takes yeah. time to develop.
That might take 2 years.
You got to really get it right.
Yeah.
You can't come halfway with the mugs.
Yeah.
It's a very competitive market.
Yo, that was Yumi on Rebel Radio. Let us know what you think. Hit us up with a comment or a review on iTunes, on Spotify, on YouTube. We have videos from a lot of our episodes popping up there. You can hit us on Twitter at Rebel Radio Net, our Facebook page, or most importantly, just come back next week for more Rebel Radio. Peace.